This is London. London calling in the home, overseas, and European services of the BBC and through United Nations Radio Mediterranean. And this is John Snagg speaking. Under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France.
There was cloud at first, white, woolly cloud over which we flew in the brilliant sun. But as we approached the channel, it broke into patches, and through a big gap, I saw the shining blue sea. Not an empty sea, but a sea crowded, infested with craft of every kind. Little ships, fast and impatient, scurrying like water beetles to and fro, and leaving a glistening wake behind them. Bigger ships in stately, slow procession, with the sweepers in front, and the escort vessels on the flank. It was a brave, oh, an inspiring sight. Dozens, scores, hundreds of craft lying close inshore. There were the vehicles, making their way inland. A great fire burning to starboard. The guns in action there, too, jets and puffs of bursting shells. We are supplying the beaches, all right. No doubt of that.
First thing we saw was gun flashes. That was from the big ships that were behind us as we gradually went in slowly. And we also remember it was spring tides, and it was only a few feet below you. It was all these obstacles which had limpet mines on, and you was often wondering whether you were going to catch one. Actually, one of our sister ships, 7073, she did catch one. She dropped her hook and she dragged it up with her and blew her stern off.
We came sliding and slewing in on some light breakers and grounded. I stepped ashore on France, walking up a beach where men were moving casually about, carrying equipment inshore. Up the coast a few hundred yards, German shells were pounding in regularly. But in our area, it was peacefully busy. How did you make out, I asked one of the men. It was reasonably soft, he said. The Germans had some machine gun posts and some high-velocity guns on the palisades and made it a little hot at first. They waited until the landing craft dropped their ramps, then opened up on them while the men were still inside. In a few cases, we took heavy casualties. Then the Navy went to work on the German guns, and it wasn't long before they were quiet.
It's an extraordinary thing to be in this aeroplane, a tiny microcosm poised in space, looking down as history probably in a few moments will begin to unroll itself before my eyes. I'm going to go on broadcasting as best I can to the end of this, my sixth record. I've been very disappointed by the way the thing's been cutting, but it's very bumpy and I suppose the poor edgy thing can't stand it. I'll go on to the end because I've got to tell you that we're now over France. We're just behind the invasion beaches. I've already seen the invasion craft out on the way. We're in colossal static storm at the moment, which is rattling in my ears like mad. Probably the engine noise, I can't hear myself speak at all. I don't know whether anybody ever will hear me speak because it's the most curious situation with this colossal row going on. But anyway, I hope this record will come out. We're just waiting to go in and do our dive attack on the target. I think I can see the flares now, the Pathfinder stuff ahead. We're getting up speed. I don't think I can talk to you while we're doing this job. I'm not a blinking hero, but I want just to keep my eye on it and I'll report to you what's happened. I don't think it's much good trying to do these flash running commentaries when you're doing a dive bombing attack on a bridge. Well, I'll try. I'll wait till this damn thing runs out of juice anyway. My God, there's some bloody nasty flak around this place. There's a very nasty flak, blasted. Never mind. I heard the bomb aimer say just now, go in and do your stuff. Go straight and steady, straight and steady. Oh, there they go. My God, what a lift. What a good lift up into the air. We feel much lighter now. There's a colossal splash on the left. We're banking around to see what's happened. There's a hell of... It's a colossal lot of flame from these bombs. It's the most remarkable thing I've ever seen. Anyway, we dropped the stuff and I think we're going to make a break for it.
German shelling continued steadily at various points up and down the beach, but so far not reached the area in which I was walking. I climbed a rock embankment and came to a piece of flat land where hundreds of men were digging slip trenches. When they got down about a foot and a half, they struck water. Some of them were lying in the water, and I asked if there was much shelling. "There is when there is," one man said. "Right now there isn't, but when it comes, it sure comes." Suddenly a voice said, "Watch yourself, fella, that's a mine." A soldier sprawled on the bank was speaking. He had one foot half blown off. He'd stepped on a mine a short time earlier. Now, while he waited for litter bearers, he was warning other soldiers about other mines in that vicinity. I can stand the dead, but the wounded horrify me, and I only looked at him to thank him. At the top of the palisade, the knot of men had gotten to its feet, and it looked like the line might move. One man darted over the skyline, and almost immediately afterwards, we heard the speedy burst of a German machine gun. Then a few stray rifle shots. The bullets cracked overhead, and everyone instinctively ducked lower. These were some troops who had never seen combat before, and the bullets must have seemed close to them, although we were 100 feet below the skyline.
I went to the top of the cliff. The cliff itself was mined, so I couldn't go very far onto the edge. But on the top, from the top of a wall, I had a sight on the sea, and that will remain the sight of my life, because we realized that something great had happened that night, but we couldn't know that that landing was there. And I remember that seeing that the sea full of boats of all kinds, big boats and little ones, at 12 o'clock I saw the first British tank who had come back behind the woods through the Germans' bunker. They knew very well where they were. And the first British on his tank came straight to our house to ask me if the Germans were still there. I only could tell them that they were gone. Then began the arriving of tanks, then troops, and we had the feeling that it was a great success for the British Army.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe, made in conjunction with our great Russian allies. I have this message for all of you. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching. All patriots, men and women, young and old, have a part to play in the achievement of final victory. To members of resistance movements, whether led by nationals or by outside leaders, I say, follow the instructions you have received. To patriots who are not members of organized resistance groups, I say, continue your passive resistance, but do not needlessly endanger your lives. Wait until I give you the signal to rise and strike the enemy.
The airborne forces are being reinforced at the moment. It's just about 9 o'clock and a whole mass of gliders has just come in, having been towed across the channel from Britain. They've received a particularly severe welcome from the German ACAC defenses, and the flak has been going up from all around us because we're hemmed in on two or three sides here by Germans. But so far as I've seen, no glider has been hit, and all the tug planes have managed to drop their loads and swing safely away. But having failed to crack the gliders with their flak, the Germans have now begun to shell the landing zone, the rough cloud strip where the gliders are coming in to land. Above, there is a fleet of Spitfires and Thunderbolts that have been protecting the gliders and their tugs in this perilous cross-channel crossing. That was another enemy shell landing a little bit further away from here and landing, I think, very near the landing zone where the gliders are coming down now. I can see about four or five coming in through the trees, skimming very low over the ploughed field and coming into touchdown. There'll barely be room for them. There'll barely be room for them to get down there because the Germans have studded the whole field with the poles. And last night, a large number of gliders came down there, and many of them crashed on hitting the poles or in bouncing over the rough ground.
The sky is crossed and recrossed by tracer, and the distinctive sputter of an MG-34 light machine gun is quite near us. We lie on the ground under a hedge, and like a tentacle into the air goes the radio aerial. Things are going well for our troops at this early hour. They have deployed and infested the whole area around the dropping zone. They have captured the bridges over the river and a canal that links our landing head with our left flank.
The paratroops are landing. They're landing all around me as I speak. They've come in from the sea, and they're fluttering down, red, white, and blue parachutes fluttering down, and they're just about the best thing that we've seen for a good many hours. They're showering in, there's no other word for it, pouring in threes and fours, and they're fluttering down in perfect formation, just the way we've seen it on the newsreels, the way we've seen it done in exercises, and here they're doing it, the real thing, and believe me, they haven't come any too late. There'll be a very unpleasant surprise to the enemy, who's fighting. I can still see the signs of a typical panzer battle. You can hear the aircraft roaring over me, I expect, as I speak. I can still see the signs of a typical panzer battle being raged on the slightly high ground just about 3 or 4 miles ahead of me. And these paratroops are coming down between where I'm speaking, which is just above the sand dunes. Down they come. They're being attacked pretty harshly, as you'll hear, but they're landing in great force between the sand dunes, between the beach area and the battle, and they may have a very decisive effect on that battle. Jerry's putting up to try and stave this surprise eventuality off, but he isn't able to cope. The aircraft are sweeping inland, letting go their valuable cargo, sweeping round as if nothing mattered, and tearing again out to sea. And they're still coming in. I'm just turning round to look out to sea, and I can see away out to the very horizon. They're coming in flood after flood.
The build-up is going well. I spent some hours on the beaches this morning watching men, food, ammunition and supplies come streaming in. It's a combined operation between Navy, Army and Merchant Navy. The effort is enormous. The results, in some cases, staggering. I talked to the principal beachmaster on one sector, a tall, bearded naval lieutenant commander. Our conversation was punctuated by the orders he gave to craft, shouted through a loud hailer. Keep to windward there, 1047. Keep clear of the duck entrance. Next moment, he was dictating signals to be flashed by lamp along the beach. He was answering army officers, queries about the tide and obstructions. But he was right on top of the job. His men, Royal Naval Commandos, some of them, were busy clearing wrecked landing craft and marking with red flags new traffic lanes through the shallows. And up and down those lanes, almost as though on conveyor belts, the regular steady stream of ducks was moving. Hundreds of them. They went out empty from the shore, changed from wheel drive to propeller a few yards out, and made tracks, or rather wakes, for the merchantmen lying 2 or 3 miles out to sea. Down the next door lane, they were coming inshore, reversing the process, and driving their piled cargoes of sugar crates, tires, petrol, shells, up the coast road to the depots. The beaches are alive with vehicles and men. Red caps imperturbably directing traffic. Bulldozers flattening mounds into carriageways which are matted and spread over with wide mesh netting. The sappers still blowing a few mines. The west wall still being demolished with pneumatic drills.
When the long marching rows and lines of landing craft had gone through, we outsweeps and started again to broaden that channel of safe water. All that day we swept until late in the evening we were back, and last night found anchorage off France again. A big blown-up moon arose and then got lost behind the overcast. The men who weren't on watch were taking naps wherever they could, but not for long. Action stations sounded, and they all stood too. A crisscrossing eruption of tracer flak broke from the hundreds of ships around like a sparse field of wheat. Jerry was up in the overcast trying to make trouble. Next, horizontal tracer and a stutter of guns arose to the northeast and told where some of our destroyers were having a brush with E-boats. This crew, who by now looked groggy with fatigue, started up the song of the minesweepers. It sung to the tune of a well-known hymn. Sweeping, 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 always something well sweeping, early in the morning and half the so-and-so night. Sweeping, 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 always blue-penciled sweeping, where all the mines come from, an exalted member of the deity knows.
Two hours ago, I was looking at Caen Cathedral, standing up gray and soft in the light of the sun. We were flying into France at 200 miles an hour to attack an important concentration of German tanks of the 21st Panzer Division gathered in the path of the Allied armies advancing beneath us. We were sweeping inland, swinging round again, now heading straight for the road junction and the tiny village where the panzers were sheltering. We were over the German army. Our own lay behind. I saw two trucks driving down a road, but behind us, a Dutch pilot saw a long column of German transport moving up. From an enemy aerodrome to starboard came puffs of flak, below and behind us, not near enough to worry about. France was green and glistening. The bomb doors were open, and before I expected it, our bombs were away, and at the same moment all the other Mitchells following in our formation let go, and I saw the green and brown bombs sailing down. "Watch 'em," said the wing commander. I was watching, over his shoulder as he banked to port. We waited. What a long time bombs take to go down. And then there was a shout. The whole area of the road junction had erupted. Fountains of earth and smoke and dust and flame shot up and hung in the evening sunlight like poplar trees. The village and the German armor were hidden in the chaos.
I'm lying down at full length here in the cornfield. Just in the hedges around me, I can see many men taking shelter behind the banks wearing their steel helmets while this terrific barrage goes on around us. In this barrage, we've got our 4.2-inch mortars, our field guns, our medium guns, all the guns of the fleet. The shells are whistling overhead now. Just listen to them.
Further up the road, and a bent old woman in a black shawl bids us good day. She stayed in bed through it all, she says, but the ceiling fell in on top of her, and now she's no habitable home. So much the worse, monsieur, but it can't be helped. There's a notice now on the roadside. Roads and verge cleared to next village. We walk on, past some of our signalmen who are running wires between the telephone poles from which the lines are dangling in a tangled skein. We find a holiday camp at the fringe of the town, obviously used latterly as a German barracks, with small arms ammo left there, beside piles of mine warning notices, and under a bell that's marked in German, gas alarm. The broken windows of the straggling buildings creak and rattle in the breeze. Perhaps with snipers about, it's not quite such a healthy place. We wander on through the town. Life doesn't seem so very abnormal. A barber invites us in for a shave, and just at that moment, the guns from one of our cruisers in the bay open up and shells go hurtling overhead. We think they might unsteady his hand. we decline politely and wander on, gradually making our way back towards the beaches again.
I drove into this town a little while ago and found an army loudspeaker van just going into action here in this square. For the last few minutes now, it's been playing lively French tunes, and I'm told that the 6:30 news in French is just going to come through from London.
Everybody's standing by quietly now, waiting for the news to begin. In a few moments' time, we shall hear the voice of France coming over the BBC. There you'll hear the three dots and a dash, the Morse sign. Listen.
And now, while armoured cars and trucks and lorries go rumbling through this town along the main road up towards the battlefront, the people of the town are gathered round this loudspeaker van, listening to the latest news of the war as it comes over the air from London. Listen to the voice of France again.
A réussi à débarquer dans l'île d'Elbe. En Italie, les frontaliers progressent.
Our troops, tin-hatted and dusty, are everywhere about, clearing debris, mingling with the inhabitants, passing through in truckloads. A sergeant falls in his section, just in front of the war memorial, a plain bronze obelisk, quite undamaged. Behind it, the church has a shell hole through its tapering steeple. And we learn that a few hours before, two snipers were winkled out from it with the help of a naval gun. We learn, too, that more snipers are about in the town, and we're advised to go warily. Inside, the church is almost undamaged, and a mounting heap of fresh white flowers adorns a shrine, while a statue of Joan of Arc in shining armour looks down from a niche in the wall. We leave the market square and walk along a roadway to the east. There, in one of the big gardens, are three British privates stalking through the bushes with rifles at the ready. Snipers suspected, the sentry tells us. But in the orchard beyond, a flock of young lambs are frisking and playing, quite unconcerned.
At 3:30 in the afternoon, a car drove through the little narrow streets of ancient Bayeux with a loudspeaker, shouting the news that de Gaulle was in France, and that at 4:00 he'd address the citizens in the Place du Château. The words were like an electric shock. The people surged into the streets, too moved at first to cheer, but then cheering and singing the Marseillaise. Then de Gaulle came. And he came not in a big car with a lot of fanfare, but into the main street on foot. He walked down the long street, and the people fell in behind him. It was like a scene from a film, the tall, handsome general and the people following, and France soon to be free.
La bataille de France a commencé. Il n'y a plus dans la nation, dans l'Empire, dans les armées, qu'une seule et même volonté, qu'une seule et même espérance. Derrière le nuage si lourd de notre sang et de nos larmes, voici que reparaît le soleil de notre grandeur.
Of this little Normandy church, 2 or 3 miles from Caen, wants me to say how sorry he is about these bells. His village has only just been liberated, and it's taken until yesterday to clean up the many German snipers left in hiding. When I asked the curé if we might record the bells of his church ringing in celebration of the village's freedom, he asked me to wait for a week, and this is why. They used to have a very lovely little carillon in this church. Only 3 bells, but they were very proud of it, and many of the villagers were expert bell ringers. But when the Allies freed the village, 3 German snipers hid in the square tower of the church, and for 2 nights they were very troublesome. At last they gave themselves up, but it was found that they had smashed the big bell of the carillon. Monsieur le Curé promised that if I would only wait a week, he would have the big bell repaired, and you could hear the full carillon.
but he added that in any case, they were going to ring the remaining two bells at once this morning to celebrate our coming. And I thought that you would rather hear the bells now, even though the big one has been smashed by the Germans, to let you know that the people of Normandy are celebrating their liberation. The church bells are ringing, and the villagers are going to mass to give thanks for their freedom.